You're listening to the Public Health Perspectives Podcast. Welcome to another episode of Public Health Perspectives, a podcast series targeted towards strengthening the future public health workforce. We will explore the narratives of public health care professionals and gain insight on career paths that shape the profession. And now, your host, Camilla Singletary.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Public Health Perspectives. Today I'm speaking with Lindsay Cloud, and she's the director of the Policy Surveillance Program at the Center for Public Health Law Research, and this is housed at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. And I'm also speaking with Lance Gable, who's an associate professor of law at Wayne State University and an expert on public health law and bioethics. Today we'll be talking about legal epidemiology. Both Lindsay and Lance are authors in an upcoming supplement. For some, legal epidemiology may be a newer term, but it is increasingly important as public health professionals work to address various social determinants of health and the policies and practices that also influence those social determinants of health. So, Lindsay, for those that don't know, can you give a brief definition of what legal epidemiology is?
Sure. So essentially, it's the study of the impact of laws and policies on health. And if the concept of legal epi is new to you, the single most important takeaway is simply that laws and legal practices can be studied in the same general manner with the same general scientific methods as any other social phenomenon of importance to population health. Sometimes it's easier to think of it with an example. So to put the concept into practice, think about basically the past decade and the inception of texting and driving bans. And what legal epi does to capture the features of these texting and driving bans is to capture, has there been a total ban? Does the law only ban specific drivers, such as school bus drivers or novice drivers? What is the fine? So after capturing kind of the nuance of these laws, an evaluator would then be able to compare the laws across the country to see kind of the incidence and its effect on car crash fatalities. Only then would you be able to say whether and how those laws are working. So, long story short, the study of the impact of laws and policies on health outcomes.
Did you want to add anything, Lance?
I think it really opens up a new dimension in thinking about public health, because there are so many ways that we can use this information once it's been collected, in addition to combining it with other kinds of public health studies, to really get a much more complete and vivid understanding about how different factors impact health, and also how we can use modifications in the law potentially to make health better. Over time, we can study these effects and really have a better sense of how to structure our laws and policies in ways that make good health more likely to occur.
And so, of course, people who are already in the public health profession and the people who are going to be the future of public health, we want to make sure that they're trained to view these social determinants of health from that legal standpoint, like you guys talked about, the policies and practices. How has legal epidemiology been incorporated into classwork and training for those who are going to have a future role evaluating those policies and practices?
Well, introducing legal epidemiology into educational and training settings has been kind of a gradual process. And in some cases, it's kind of been an unconscious process. At least initially, over the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen an increasing effort to try to combine the fields of law and public health into a more cohesive framework in educational settings in both law schools and in schools of public health. You know, starting in the 1990s and early 2000s, we saw a real growth in dual degree programs where people could get a JD degree and an MPH degree together, and more collaborations between educational programs in law and public health. And that was kind of the beginning of the evolution of these kinds of educational approaches. And as the field of public health law has really evolved over the last 30 years, and as the methodologies and concepts of legal epidemiology have been developed, especially in the last 10 years or so, we're now seeing law schools and schools of public health begin to really incorporate these approaches into classes. And it's still at a relatively early stage, I would say, but I think there are some really important opportunities here. One of the reasons that I think legal epidemiology is such a good way to approach a cross-disciplinary or transdisciplinary primary educational model is that the kinds of things that you learn through these techniques and through these methods are really important for students in law schools and students in schools of public health. It really provides a way to think about these disciplines that broadens the perspective significantly. So let me give just kind of two examples. So in law schools, typically students are taught to analyze cases, analyze statutes, try to understand their meanings and interpretations, but very rarely in law schools are students asked to really think beyond that initial level of analysis to think about how laws are actually going to impact on the population, particularly in population health. And so by using legal epidemiology and thinking about how social science methods can be applied to study the effects of laws on the population, students in law schools can not only understand or try to interpret and track and evaluate the types of effects that laws and policies will have, but they can also think in a more sophisticated way about things like causation, things like risk, things like cause and effect, and have a much more nuanced view of their legal material are really going to achieve or affect in the population at large. Likewise, I think students who are in public health programs who are learning some of these methods of biostatistics and epidemiology in a scientific setting also gain a perspective from legal epidemiology that these same kinds of approaches and methods can be used to look at the impact of law and policy on population health outcomes. And it solidifies the idea that law is a social and structural determinant of health, but it also solidifies the idea that the methods that they're using actually have much broader application than I think many students would have appreciated. So I think there's a real opportunity to use legal epidemiology as a way not only to bring the two fields closer together, but to really expand and broaden the educational understandings of students in both fields.
And so you mentioned students taking a look at laws and policies. What's the difference between policy surveillance and then a legal assessment? How do those two things differ?
Sure. So to give you the definition of policy surveillance, the formal one, it's the systematic collection, analysis, and dissemination of laws and policies across jurisdictions and over time. Legal assessment uses the same methods as policy surveillance, except for the fact that it's capturing the laws or policies at one point in time. So the only difference between the two is really the cross-sectional nature of legal assessment and the longitudinal nature of policy surveillance. Kind of important features of both are that they capture the law at multiple levels. So that can include state statutes and regulations, local ordinances, national constitutions, so you can compare countries to each other. It can drill down as nuanced as school district policies, hospital ordinances, Medicaid policies, etc. These methods, they also allow researchers to not only capture whether or not a law or policy exists within a jurisdiction, which of course is a finding in and of itself. Also, it allows researchers to capture the key provisions of these laws and policies. Now, these methods that are used to carry out legal epi projects, so both legal assessments and policy surveillance, they differ from traditional public health law practice that Lance mentioned is really taught in law schools and has been evolving by the teaching of legal epi. And the biggest point of kind of difference between legal epi and traditional public health law practice is that legal epi really focuses on rigor, quality control, and transparency that leads to the creation of legal data that can be then used for evaluation.
Partnerships, especially in terms of policy, often it involves people coming together from both health and non-health sectors and collaborating with multiple sectors. What are some methods that are used to inform decision makers about pertinent health issues and then some of the consequences of their potential decisions?
So I think that there's a few key points here as to how the methods are used to inform decision makers. I would say the first, which is kind of echoing my previous statements, is that the methods turn the text of law into data. This allows researchers to actually evaluate whether a law is having a good, a bad, or maybe even an unintended effect on health. I think the second is that this process fills the need for nonpartisan information about status and trends in laws and policies. The reason being is that the methods really strip interpretation and ask
questions that strictly observe features of the law rather than traditional lawyering, which really interprets the law. It also tracks change over time to measure progress. It allows for the diffusion of innovative policy ideas. One example of this was showcased in a project, cityhealth.org. If you're unfamiliar with that site or project, definitely check it out. But basically, policy surveillance data was created, and we put an algorithm in place to rank 40 of the largest cities and assign them medals based on their policies across 9 public health topics, such as earned sick leave and affordable housing. Now, this work really led to tangible policy changers as policymakers and legislators. They were easily able to see and compare their city against, you know, another city to hunt for good ideas or identify where they stand in the pack. And in doing so, some moved up in their medal status. So after this project was released, 59 new policies were put into place across these 40 cities from 2017 to 2019. So this is just one example of the diffusion of innovative policy ideas that can happen after you put policy surveillance into practice. I would say the last important piece is it really builds workforce capacity, because once you create a policy surveillance project, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. The open source legal data is available and can be used, replicated, and updated by outside researchers, etc.
And so we're looking at things like clean air and housing, living wages, these things that are social determinants of health. What are some of the most non-conventional partnerships that you've seen?
Well, I would say, first of all, that historically speaking, the fact that we have so many people right now working across the divide between, or what used to be a divide between law and public health, just having legal and public health practitioners working together, collaborating so seamlessly in many of these legal epidemiology efforts is amazing and somewhat non-conventional, at least in the longer term. Now, in the shorter term and more recently, I think one of the things that we've really seen that's really innovative is the increase in use of data and use of these methodologies to really explore many of the different underlying social determinants of health that have been examined rigorously from a more scientific perspective, but the legal aspect had really been left out in the past. And I think that's one of the ways that this special issue really adds to the literature and adds to the field. You know, there's so many examples just in this issue, you know, looking at housing-related laws and policies, examining how SSI benefits and other insurance benefits that cover diabetes, self-management, education, and training bring together not only law and public health expertise, but expertise related to environmental science and exploration, looking at the impact of economics, understandings of insurance, understandings of community outreach, community health workers, social work. There's an article in the issue that talks about the impact of legal regimes on the pre-hospital and in-hospital care for stroke, and you know, that looks not only at public health aspects of the system, but also medical care as well as the EMS system. And so I feel like there are so many opportunities to bring in diverse and disparate disciplines into this kind of work, and depending on which aspect of social determinants of health a researcher might be interested in, collecting that legal data, collecting the information that will broaden the scientific data and really try to link those together using these different disciplines and these different areas of expertise is a really important innovation in thinking about how we can have beneficial impact on population health.
I didn't get any formal training on public health law when I was going through getting my public health degrees, but I do agree that it's something that should be incorporated into some sort of coursework for public health students. So what other training opportunities exist for those really interested in that intersection between public health and law and epidemiology?
We have a few offerings as of now, and two things that we're working on developing currently that I'll mention. The most hands-on training we offer at the Policy Surveillance Program here at the Center at Temple is we have an annual summer institute, which will be held in Philadelphia June 1st and 2nd of this summer. It's a 2-day intensive training workshop on our methods. So registration will be open in February, and you can sign up for our newsletter at phlr.org if you're interested in the Summer Institute or any of the other offerings I will mention briefly. We also have a live monthly webinar series. It's an interactive webinar that we host every month on our methods. If you're not interested in that or you're not able to make those times, we also have 8 self-paced modules modules that really walk you through the methods. All of this is available on our website, lawatlas.org. Another great place to find self-paced trainings is on the Public Health Law Academy site run by Change Lab Solutions. Those are our current offerings, but two things that are in development. One is a formal certificate in public health law research, and we plan to launch this online in fall of 2020. Right now, it's only offered to students at Temple University. And lastly, in partnership with the Network for Public Health, we're ramping up an on-the-road training program for health departments or other organizations who are interested in the five essential public health law services. The five essential public health law services basically took the transdisciplinary model and in the mode of the 10 essential public health law services, which many listeners may be familiar with, I'm sure, put it in the form of a set of observable, measurable, and improvable services that you can actually undertake in-house at your public health department. So we are launching those trainings as well over the next several months. And again, all of this, if you'd like more information, more details, please sign up for our newsletter and be in touch.
Great. Thank you. Did you want to add anything, Lance?
All I'll add is that because there are so many new projects and there's so much new research going on in this field, you should also keep your eyes open for work that uses legal epidemiology in public health and legal journals. I would particularly encourage you to check out our special issue that's coming out in the next week or so, which, as I mentioned earlier, has some really innovative studies and really good examples of how this field is growing and breaking new ground all of the time.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay and Lance, for being guests on the show. And thank you for everything that you do to further improve the field of public health. For our listeners, make sure you check out the Legal Epidemiology Supplement that will be available in February 2020 through the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. Lance, Lindsay, and colleagues give us a better understanding of legal epidemiology and how policies are put into practice. All journal issues and supplements can be found on the journal site at journals.lww.com/JPHMP. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.